the life story of the foremost man of our time, Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill, no longer a minister of the crown, but once again a soldier in the field of battle, a subaltern commanding a battalion in France after so many years at the Admiralty. Back on leave in March 1916.
Back again, my dear. And by Jove, what a hard-working woman you look. Why, that uniform looks most businesslike.
I'm in charge of a chain of canteens for munition workers in the north of London. I haven't a moment to myself. Do you know I'm in charge of feeding about 300,000 people?
No, not really.
Of course, it's true. I've been promoted.
Well, that's wonderful, my dear. I'm afraid you're bringing all the honor and glory to the name of Churchill.
Oh, nonsense. You've been fighting in France. Oh, I'm so happy to see you back again, looking so fit and well, Winston. Tell me what happened over there.
Oh, nothing very much. I took over the trenches at Plugstilt. They call it Plug Street. There was no major offensive, so I started a system of night strafes on my own responsibility. Every night we'd make a sortie after some military artillery activity, and this distracted the Germans and kept us from being bored. Oh, apart from that, nothing happened of note.
Nothing happened. How absurd. I suppose every second was occupied and you just missed being killed a score of times.
It wasn't half as dangerous as the House of Commons. But that's why I'm back. They've given me special leave to attend the debate on the naval estimates. Naturally, it wouldn't be a sitting without the ex-First Lord. Of course, my men don't know exactly why I'm back in London. They know I'll be at the House, but they think I'm going to speak on their personal and individual grievances.
And what are they?
Too much plum jam and too little leave.
Are you going to speak, really?
Superfluous question. Of course I'm going to speak. I'm going to say a few things about naval affairs. You get leave, too, and come along and listen. You know how much you encourage me.
Oh, I'll see what I can do. But you've got to come along and see me at work, too. Promise?
All right. I promise.
I would like to warn my right honorable friend and successor to the Admiralty of the imminence of a renewed submarine campaign. In a naval war, particularly, you must always be asking about the enemy. What now? What next? You must always be seeking to penetrate. And your measures must always be governed and framed on the basis that he would do what you would least like him to do. My right honorable friend, Jude, that the late...
So good news for you, my dear. I'm not going back to France, at least for a while. My battalion's been disbanded through lack of men. In the meantime, I'm involved in this Dardanelles inquiry. Heaven knows how long that's going to take.
The government's having a lot of trouble, isn't it?
Yes, things have gone so badly this year that the cabinet's divided into two sections.
But the conscription bill's been passed.
Only at the cost of unity. Asquith and Kitchener gave in, and Sir John Simon was the only man to resign. The cabinet's badly shaken. I don't think they can last much longer.
If Mr. Asquith resigns, who is the most likely Prime Minister?
Well, Lloyd George, undoubtedly.
Would that mean that you'd be asked to rejoin the cabinet?
It might. But the opposition would probably be too strong. In any case, I'd rather go back to France. As soon as this inquiry is finished, I'm going to apply for another command.
Oh, I suppose you know best, dear. But I do think your services would be more valuable at home.
Unfortunately, Clementine, or fortunately, perhaps... quite a number of people wouldn't agree with you. Apparently, my days are numbered. Kitchener appears to be in the same case.
But Lord Kitchener's still in office.
Yes, just between ourselves, Clementine. They're sending him to Russia to investigate the position there. It's a convenient method of getting him out of the way. Well, he and I both did our best. Perhaps history won't judge us very harshly.
Thank you.
to think of it, Winston.
It's horrible. And yet, somehow, grand. A tragic ending, but a magnificent one.
Kitchener, dead. I can see him now as he stood before us that day, the day you left the Admiralty. I can hear his last words. Well, there's one thing they can't take from you. The fleet was ready.
And I've never forgotten that. We had our differences. Many things we were unable to see eye for eye. I attacked him often. And yet, in the moment of my defeat, he was kind and generous to a fallen opponent.
And now, to meet death like that. Oh, Winston.
It was the end he might have chosen for himself if he'd been given the power. The sudden onrush of the night. The deep waters of the north. To preserve his name and his renown from the shallows. Better to sink beneath the shock than moulder piecemeal on the rock. It's the end of a great story. A story of a long life full of action, lighted by hard-won achievement, crowned by power such as a British subject has rarely wielded, and all the regard and honour that Britain and her empire can bestow. Better that such a life should reach its consummation in a warrior's death.
Ah, Riddell. How are you?
I'm here as messenger, Churchill. As a matter of fact, I have something very confidential to tell you.
Well, we're quite alone here. Your message is from Lloyd George, I suppose.
Yes. You know, of course, what's been happening. Lloyd George has been asked by the King to form the ministry. Ascot will have nothing to do with the new government. And it looks as though Bonalore and Carson are to share Lloyd George's responsibility.
I know the outlines of the story, but I haven't been near David for fear of embarrassing him.
Yes, that's exactly why he hasn't come to see you, Churchill. The position is rather delicate at the moment. Northcliffe is dead against either you or Balfour joining the government.
Yes, I read the leaders in both the Times and the Daily Mail exhorting the country's leaders to exclude from office those who've been responsible for the failures of the war.
Yes, if that exhortation were taken seriously, how many of us would survive? As a matter of fact, there's an equally strong prejudice against Northcliffe himself taking office. Many people are talking about the power of the press being used to dictate the politics of the country.
So, Northcliffe and Churchill, opposed to each other, are jointly opposed by others. It's an odd situation, Riddell.
It's the Conservatives who are against you both. They've formed a powerful group. Some might almost call it a cabal. And the Prime Minister can't do without their support.
And what's your message?
He's determined to have you in the Cabinet. But he asked me to tell you that the adverse forces are too strong for the moment. He asks you to have patience.
Patience? It isn't a characteristic virtue of mine, as he knows only too well. But of course, I understand his position. Besides, until the Dardanelles Commission has presented its report, my record at the Admiralty must be considered sub judice. Tell Lloyd George I've no wish to embarrass him, and that I'm quite resigned to a period of waiting.
It may not be as long as you think, Churchill.
And in the meantime, we march into another year of war. I wonder what 1917 will bring forth.
Are you ready, Winston?
For what, David?
The hour has struck. I need you.
For what?
We'll talk about that later. Just at the moment, I want you to retrace with me these last 6 months. From January to July of this terrible year of 1917.
I've been worried for your sake, David. No Prime Minister of Britain has ever been called on to face so much.
Failure in the Balkans, the collapse of our offensive in France, Italy's lack of success, Russia's downfall, and the appalling loss of our shipping. The only item on the credit side is the intervention of the United States.
And the benefit of that will take a considerable time to be felt. Well, you've left out something, too.
Have I? Is there another misfortune yet?
The demoralization of the French army. That was the most serious blow of all.
Well, was there ever a more dismal recital? And during all those months, with the world crashing about my head, there was not one man who could say to me, courage, the dawn is coming. Not one man who, even in the face of disaster, could raise a spirit of optimism and plan for the victory to come. I've been alone, Winston. That's why I need you now.
Will they let me in?
Damn them. They've got to. I'm asking you to help me, Winston. You're not going to refuse, are you? You're not going to let them bluff you out.
Well, if you want me, David, that's all that matters. What's the job?
You can have either the Ministry of Munitions or the ministry I've just created, the Air Ministry. But if you choose that, I've got to make certain rearrangements.
You want me to take charge of munitions, don't you? Well, I'd prefer that.
There's no need to tell you how important it is, Winston. We're short of shipping. Those damned U-boats have done that. We're short of steel, skilled labor, and dollars. Now that America's in, that won't be so acute. We've already sold 1,000 million sterling of American securities, and Northcliffe's gone over to see what he can do.
When he comes back and finds me in the cabinet, he won't be very pleased, will he?
I've given up trying to please people. Sir Edward Carson wants you. General Smuts wants you. Bonalaw's quite happy about you coming in. When are you ready to start work?
I've been aching to start work for 6 months. Tell me where to begin, David. You've saved my life.